Welcome to Engage 360, Denver Seminary's podcast. Join us as we explore the redemptive power of the gospel and the life-changing truth of scripture at work in our culture today.
Hi, friends. Welcome to Engage 360, Denver Seminary's podcast. I'm your host, Timothy Kohler. Thank you for joining us for today's conversation. I am delighted to have on the podcast today, Dr. Kanoti. Dr. Kanoti is the author of Making Peace with Fire, Harnessing Conflict to Transform Your Relationships. And I recently finished this book, and I'm very excited to have Dr. Kanoti here on the podcast with us. One, because we get to talk about this fantastic book that he's written, but also because he recently joined the adjunct faculty in the leadership department at Denver Seminary. So Dr. Kanoti, welcome to the adjunct faculty in the leadership department and to the Engage 360 podcast.
Thank you, Tim. I'm excited to be here.
So I would love, as we get started with our conversation, for those that may not know who you are, can you tell us a little bit about the journey that you've been on, who you are, that led you to being a faculty member, to writing this book, and just a little bit about the journey you've been on?
Once again, thank you for the invitation to be here and to share my story, as well as to share this book with the audience. I am also excited to serve with Denver Seminary as an adjunct faculty, and I'm looking forward to what that process is going to look like in the next whatever many years God gives us. I am born in Kenya, in the eastern part of Kenya, around Mount Kenya. So my name would, to any Kenyan, would betray me as a Meru. Meru, that's the tribe I'm born in. And of course, I go into that detail because it shows up in the book as well, and it's relevant to anybody who understands the tribal connections in an African context. Raised there in the 70s, in the 80s, and went to school from there, studied sociology, and then went straight to working for a Christian NGO, World Vision International. And most of my 90s I spent doing community work, and especially working in a different community than my own. And again, that is relevant because that is where I experienced the real ostracizing of somebody who is from a different tribal community. And then afterwards, I feel the call of God to do missions. And therefore, together with my wife at the time and our son, we come to the United States to go to Fuller Theological Seminary in California, where I study a master's and a PhD and focus primarily on two things. One, leadership for my master's, and then a PhD in peace building. And I was blessed to study with really wonderful people in pastoral theology and focusing on how the church can be engaged, or Christians ought to be engaged in issues of peace building in their communities. So that's that part of the journey. And then it takes a really interesting turn after my studies. I'm thinking I'm going to be a missionary in the traditional sense of missionary work. And then God opens a door for me to go back into the NGO world. And I end up doing water development with Life Water International for a couple of years. And then I'm invited to Regis University in Denver to be a professor of NGO management and actually leadership and management, but focusing mostly on NGO management. Right now, running their two master's programs in NGO management as well as sustainable development. So that's, you know, some of the journey does really touch on this subject, but a lot of it is also got to do with my background, which comes from a tribal community, and tribal communities that were at conflict with the tribal communities around us. And maybe we will have some chance to visit that topic as well.
That's wonderful. So, and as an individual who has not grown up in a tribal community and hasn't had the experience working with NGOs that you've had, I'm really curious that as you've had this career trajectory and now you're working with students here in Denver, Colorado, and all the life experience you've had, I'm really curious, why then, on the other side of it, would you write about conflict resolution?
Yeah, very good question, Tim. Why would I write about conflict resolution? There are many, many reasons. And some of them, I tried to walk through those in the book, especially in chapter one, where I talk about, I grew up in a conflict situation myself. I was born in a polygamous family. So, you know, several mothers, including my mom. And in those kind of families, there is always something that is going wrong. There's always tension. There's always a fight between the siblings or whoever in there, or the mothers as well. So that's one. And then my community, the Meru tribe, is bordered by the, on the north side, by the Boran, by the Somari, and by the Dorobos. And growing up, I heard stories about we are enemies to those tribes. So you can imagine then my socialization is the one of, you know, hearing and relating with conflicts directly. And then on, you know, moving on even from the village and going on to high school, I go to a different tribal community for high school into the Kamba community. And I, later on, I come to work in that same community and I'm not accepted. I am treated very different because I don't belong there. So these aspects of feeling like you belong, but you don't belong. And then anyways, I come to the United States and finally immigrate here. And the tensions between all the communities here, the white, the black, the Hispanic. And even if it's not live on every, from my experiences and every day, there's at least an undercurrent of talks around that. Mm-hmm. And so it has forced me to go back to what I believe to be the uniting factor. What is it that really can bring true understanding, true relationships, true community, and ways of thinking that sees the other not as different or being from a different tribal community, but being of the same relationship, and that relationship is really through Christ and God, if people don't have a faith.
That's really fascinating. You start with, and I love the graphics. One of the things that was so helpful in this book was being able to have visual aids as you're making your argument for how conflict resolution works. So one of the things that was a graphic was this escalation of conflict that begins in difference, and then it begins to go out and ultimately could culminate in things like violence. And I found it to be really helpful because even just as I coach soccer teams or sports teams, there's conflict on the team about who did the right thing, who didn't do the thing that we wanted them to do. And players can get distracted from the ultimate goal of what the team is there to accomplish because they are feuding with one another. And sometimes it begins with just different play styles. But I was fascinated that what you've presented here, I can go and take and work with a youth sports team. It helps me to frame in my mind what is going on the field, but it also has the ability for us to make sense of what's going on between nation states. It was so helpful to see those things. And you give some really great information. Before we started recording, I made comment of, oh, I have never heard of this inventory before. So the Thomas Kilman inventory, you're familiar with and you use it throughout the text. And for me, I'd never heard of it before, but it was really helpful. So your PhD in peace building clearly shows up in this text. So you name the book Making Peace with Fire, and you give some examples of why you chose that. Because you help us understand a little bit about how the PhD in peace building and the title of this book are being woven together to help us make sense of conflict.
Yeah, thank you, Tim. As I started to write the material, this was not the initial title of the book. I had a different title, but as I started working on this, I think we were in one editorial meeting with my editor, and we're trying to figure out a metaphor that would really resonate across cultures and one that people would see as useful. We actually were working through a team metaphor. I grew up playing soccer myself, football as we call it, in the other side of the world. There were some ideas on using team efforts and how teams work together, but it wasn't landing well. It wasn't until it was my editor who suggested the fire metaphor. And she said, you describe fire in one of your, or in something that I had written. And she said, you talk about fire. Could you expand on that some more? And as we talked about it, it became very clear that this was something that we could use as a way to explore this topic. Again, fire is useful. very, very useful. We all depend on the warmth it gives. We depend on it to cook. We depend on it to smelt or to burn out, you know, things that we don't want in any kind of material, to purify it and to make it even better. But fire left unattended and left in an environment that it's fed with, it has fuel to go to grow from, it will burn and destroy. And we've seen that. We live in Colorado. We are quite familiar with forest fires. We know what fire can do when it's not attended and it's not controlled. It's the same with conflict. Conflict is a normal part of life. It's just like fire. It's here with us. When we control it well, it can warm our houses. It can help us feed ourselves. Conflict can help us grow. It can help us clarify goals. It can help us even strengthen our relationships. But if we do not attend to it, we've seen it all too often where it all destroy people. You know, a team, you just mentioned your football team. If the perceptions I have about another player that he's not pulling his weight or he's not doing well or something that is happening with them, I don't like them because of their personality. If I don't control that, it can end up destroying not just myself and the relationship with that other player. It can also destroy our team effort. And so it's this idea of working within a controlled environment that we recognize the power of and then use it towards enabling the kind of things we're trying to develop. And that's where this came from. Now, there's something you mentioned about this book coming out of peace studies and a PhD process. The biggest difficulty I had about developing this material was trying to distill that into common folks language. Like I'm a common folk as well. It was really trying to bring it down to a level that is not doctoral speak. It's not academic speak. And that's why I utilize a lot of stories. And that's where the metaphor also became very strong as a way to build this dialogue through the material. And so what your author, you know, anybody who is going to write something is going to find out is you have some ideas that you're coming with. You have all this material that you might be studying and researching, but really distilling it to a way that can communicate to an audience, especially a general audience, is quite a task. And I'm very, very grateful to have had an auditor and reviewers who kept me honest on that journey to say, no, this material now, you're going on this aspect, you're going academic, and we don't want that. Even the Tom and Kilman assessment that you mentioned, it's online and folks can take an assessment online and see some of that. They helped me to keep it as simple as possible so it doesn't become an academic text.
And it is very accessible, but it doesn't sacrifice the good foundations that it's built upon. And I really appreciate that because as someone that enjoys reading, I really enjoyed going through it and engaging the stories. It got me thinking. There are these little reactions within the book where you get to respond to some of the questions. And I found those to be incredibly helpful as well. And you make comment of things that you could spend many hours digging into, but you just make comment of like how we behave in relationships and particularly in the face of conflict depends largely on habits learned in our development and our upbringing. So early in the book, you're helping us to recognize that we've been formed and shaped through our experiences, but you don't go into great detail about attachment theory or some of the things that you probably could have spent a long time in, but I found it to be helpful to make reference to it and giving us some kind of pointers toward if you want to go further down that rabbit trail, you can do so, but you just are building a really good argument. But I found one of the more compelling parts of this book is you weave scripture and theology throughout the entirety of this book. You are constantly bringing stories from scripture into the forefront of your argument so that it's not just here is the theory behind this, but here's what biblical and theological inquiry will reveal to us when we get curious about our formation and how conflict is influencing us and our families and our societies. So you really were intentional about bringing that to the forefront.
I wrote this book from a biblical Christian perspective. Mm-hmm. That's the grounding. I could have written a textbook. I'm actually working on a textbook. I could have written it from any different angles. This material was primarily Christian, and that's where I wanted it to come from. But I also did not want to dissociate it from reality. So therefore, I grounded it in my African Kenyan perspective as an African. And those two things are important as somebody reads this book and as they look at it. It's accessible to anyone, not mm-hmm. just the Christians, and it's accessible to more than Africans. Anybody can read it, as you said, you enjoyed it. But I want it to be clear that I really was trying to make a case from the biblical perspective and to build that on. The other aspect to that is I came to it from the perspective that the Bible explores relationships. Mm-hmm. It's a very relational book. I did not expect the more I started to study the idea of relationship in the Bible, the more I saw how God is a very relational God. And from the beginning of time, from Genesis all the way to the end of time, it's a relationship that undergirds everything that God does. And of course, from a loving relationship. And therefore, even as he creates us as human beings, he's creating us to expand on that, to live through that, to live from a loving, caring, kind position into relationships with others. Mm. And so using that as the rails that I'm going through, it really opened up the material in a way that I was excited about, because then I have to start thinking about how have I been taught to relate with people? Mm. And that comes all the way from my broken family relationships, as a young boy. It also grows out of that into my adulthood and how the kind of habits I've inhabited and I've taken on as a way to, relate with other people or not relate with them. And therefore, some of it is challenging those kind of things that I was taught and I was encouraged in, and I was encouraged in. It also is helping me to go back to the scriptures and say, but what does the scriptures say? How do I see the other person? What do I consider them to be? C.S. Lewis says, you've never met a mortal man. You've never met any ordinary human being, that everybody is created in the image of God. And of course, we see that in the scriptures. But how do I use that? How do I relate with that in my day-to-day living? How do I relate with that with my kids, with my wife, with and all people around my community? And especially people who I will get into troubles with, conflicts with, indifferences with. It's not our differences as such. It's also part of how do I see them. And at this moment when we're engaged in this difficult issue, what am I thinking about them? Mm-hmm. And how can I still hear the Holy Spirit saying, this is a child of God?
Amen. It's so good. And I love you are constantly in the text bringing us back to values and purpose. You're helping us to create some reflective space between us and the conflict, and to not make it about that person in terms of like, you are the problem, but instead to recognize that there is a problem. And we can value one another. We can honor one another. We can work on solving the problem together. So instead of it being us versus them, here's the problem. Can we work together to do this? What are the values and what is my purpose in this? And you draw heavily from Romans chapter 12, and you are highlighting in this that do all that you can to live in peace with everyone. And you make a very bold argument. You say that assume that the relationship depends entirely on you. Your attitudes, comments, actions, and way of doing things all impact the future of any relationship you are part of. Take the perspective that says, I want this to work. I want to fight for this relationship. This means that instead of walking away so quickly when there is a disappointment, seek ways to restore the relationship, keep it going, and transform it. The most significant mental shift in do all that you can to live in peace might be realizing that we can change ourselves, not others. You're putting a lot of responsibility on us.
And the Bible does. The Bible does not give us room to walk away and blame other people. I mean, look at Adam and Eve. God does not just allow Adam to walk away and say, it's Eve. All right, you're safe. I'm going, or Cain and Abel, or any other character in the scriptures. Even Jesus himself doesn't really let someone like Nicodemus out of the hook. It all comes back to the personal and to me. And it's unfortunate that our society teaches us that we can easily blame other people and walk away from any responsibility. But if I can place enough blame on you in this context, I am free. I can walk away and say, I'm not saying there isn't abuse, and we address the issue of abuse in the scriptures, in the book.
Yep.
I'm not saying there's no abuse, and there is. But it's that aspect of, you see it, another thread you see in the Bible very clearly is the fact that I am responsible. I'm responsible for my thinking. I'm responsible for my perspectives. I'm responsible for how I see you, how I treat you. And I'm responsible when things are not going right to find the space, if possible, to come back to this. Now, you mentioned the idea of dissociating the issue from the person. And this is something that I learned from my wonderful professor, Glenn Stassen, who's written materials on books around just peace, war, and peace theory. Glenn is unfortunately passed on a few years ago. But he was a tremendous, wonderful person in helping us realize from a pastoral perspective that even as you counsel people, you have to help them see their role in the conflict. They can't just walk away. Another person I'll mention is Dr. Hossberger, who's written materials on cross-cultural conflicts as well, also passed on last year. But these were my professors and my mentors in helping me to realize it's so easy to push the things away from who I am and to start to think that I am perfect. Of course I am perfect. That's how we are trained to think. But to come back to the honesty of being, of realizing, I am the sinner here, and what can I do about this issue? Now, if I can do a real self-reflection and realize I actually have nothing to do with this, then I'm also able to engage the other person to address the issue well enough, whether or not I'm the guilty one. But first of all, it has to start with me.
I love that. I mean, one of the things I trained my soccer team in, actually, was we had them go through 7 habits of highly effective people. And the first habit is be proactive. Take responsibility for your own action. And I love that you're inviting us into this self-reflective space where we can take responsibility for these things. But I also had to chuckle. One of the headings that you had in your book early on is the ABCs of how to get into conflict with almost anyone. And I had to chuckle on this because I'm reading through the headings of this going, ah, yes, A, argumentative, B, blaming, C, character attacks, D, disrespect, E, evading. And I was like, yeah, I could start an argument with anyone just going through these ABCs. Like, that is such a helpful frame to go, yeah, I can see this show up on my soccer team. I can see this on social media constantly. I can see this in interpersonal conflicts and intimate relationships. Like, this shows up all over the place. And at the end of the chapter, you then reframe it for us to say, here's how you can get out of conflict. And it's a reframing of those ABCs. So just the practical nature of what you're providing to us and woven together with the scriptures, I have found to be such an encouraging book and such a helpful book. So I've tremendously enjoyed this. And I will say, as I was going through, I was like, okay, I'm taking responsibility. I can see how I'm contributing to conflict. I need to take responsibility. And when you get to the chapter on abuse, I found that to be so very helpful because there are these situations in which we need to do the assessment. And you tell a very compelling story of an individual who had been a government worker and the relationship they get into with a pastor and the way in which they relate to one another. And you, after you read through it, you ask the question, is this abuse. And I had to pause and really weigh on the questions that you present to say, what parts of this is abuse? What parts of this is there this culpability? And how do we get out of such a messy and complex situation? So you're bringing really good case studies and causing, at least me as I'm reading it, to reflect and think, yeah, how do you address this? So why did you include a chapter on abuse as you were going through your argument here?
Well, because sometimes those two things get confused a great deal, especially when we're dealing with power. Mm-hmm. You can get into conflict. If you and I were in conflict because, you know, we are colleagues and we're working in the same office, you don't have any supervisory role over me, that's easier to handle. And it's easier to come to the table easily and for me to call you out, Tim, hey, man, this doesn't sound right. It's easier to handle that. But in some cases where power differences are profound, and in this case, I'm thinking bosses, I'm thinking sometimes even gender differences, there can be real abuse. And we know that. I saw that in my community as I grew up, especially if women were disproportionately abused by their husbands or by men in the society. So it's not easy to say just because we are in a conflict that we shouldn't consider the role that power plays in that environment. I don't think we can talk about how to build peace and how to resolve conflicts without considering power. I mean, there could also be power differentials. I've seen that in some places where this is carried out in a way that the power that I carry, I can misuse it to abuse other people. And therefore, that person needs to be aware that, yeah, especially when we're in those roles, they need to be able to say, this is not conflict anymore. Yes, it's a conflict, but it is really truly abusive. And be able to walk away from those situations if we can. One of the things that I have discovered after the material was published, or the book was published, was this scripture in the book of Hebrews, Hebrews 12:14. Strive for peace with everyone and for the holiness without which no one will see the Lord. And I thought it's very closely related. It's actually very closely related to the verse that I used in the book from Romans. But I like this one even more because it has that balance between the idea of peace and righteousness or holiness. We know things that as Christians we know we should be working towards. And this connection between our relationships with other people, living at peace and holiness, it almost harkens back to what Jesus is talking about. Love the Lord and love your neighbor. And that's why I have really loved this verse as I've discovered it over after the book was published.
That's powerful. Thanks for sharing that passage. It's also fun that someone who has written such a great book is still learning and exploring in this area. That gives all of us hope that as we are going through things, we can continue to learn and grow. And you actually end your book talking about celebrating the success of repaired relationships. And Denver Seminary, one of our core commitments is that of redemptive relationships. So I find a significant overlap between celebrating repaired relationships and our way of articulating redemptive relationships. But you end the book thinking about growth after fire. And earlier in the book, you make the reference of farming. And as a farmer, the hard work that goes into preparing the soil and making sure that you understand each of the things that you're seeking to cultivate its growth. So could you help us understand how you see the analogy, the metaphor of farming and this idea of growth after fire?
Yeah, well, those of us who are listening to this or watching this and you're not a farmer, let me give you just the basics of farming. One is you identify the ground, you till the ground, you put the seeds in. There is always going to be some weeds that come up. And so you have to pull the weeds or it, depending on what the crop is, if you use sprays, that will kill the weeds. But also in some communities, in some places, what they will do is actually what they call slash and burn. It's not recommended, not the best way to prepare your grounds, which you burn the whole grounds. especially where they don't have mechanized farming. But once there's a pile that goes through any kind of ground and burns all the whatever the vegetation is there, there's always a growth that comes after that. And, you know, there's science around it. So there's a lot of people who will look at that and say, well, there must have been seeds in the ground and they were not burned. The growth that comes out of that is quite significant in most places. And you see that even in our mountains here. When you look at where there was a fire a few years ago, you might see the charred trees that are still standing out there, but a lot of undergrowth that starts to come up. What my thinking was around this was, if we have, sometimes when we have some intense conflicts, I'm not talking about violence, because violence obviously is another level and that can destroy. I'm talking about when we have some engagement with someone else that helps us to clarify where we are. That often what I have found, especially in my own life, is that it helps me to grow in some way. I get to understand that person differently. I get to see our relationship in a different way. I get to appreciate them bringing up the issues up. And often it does help me to, and it might even help both of us or all of us who are involved in that environment to grow in a different way. So this is what I'm trying to relate this to farming. Of course, I'm also thinking that it takes time to nurture a garden. It takes time to nurture any kind of growth. So even after you have all this new growth that comes up, that also needs to be nurtured again. And it needs to the same way you want to nurture the garden in the first place, you have to nurture this new growth again to make it viable and to make it to grow again. But that's the case. That's really the case with our relationships, because our relationships, they can be destroyed by very small things. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure there are folks who are listening to this or watching this and saying, yeah, I still don't even understand why we don't talk anymore. Because the issue was not that deep, or I walked away so quickly. And it can be that small, but it can also be huge. The issue is to, when we have the opportunity, when we have the ability to, and we come back, whether we celebrate it as directly, as I say we do, or not, but the growth that comes after that, we have to remember we need to nurture that as well.
It's so beautiful. And I love the metaphor. It's very helpful for me as someone who appreciates gardening, never been wildly successful at it, but as appreciates the work that goes into it. I found that metaphor to be really helpful, because when I would allow my garden to go untended, it would get overrun with weeds and it would start to take life away from the plants that I actually wanted to grow. And the longer I didn't tend to it, the more difficult it became then. And so part of my reality is to think through the relationships that I have and to consider, how am I tending to the quality of these relationships? And you've given some really helpful information for those of us that begin to recognize that there are these ruptures in our relationships. How can we go about doing the work of repairing those ruptures? And how can we actually begin to operate in a way that prevents ruptures from happening in the first place? So I've really appreciated the work that you've done here in the book, Making Peace with Fire. And so, Dr. Kanodi, before we close out, I'm curious, are there any things that I've not asked you that you would like for us to talk about for the Denver Seminary audience to hear?
I think it's a challenge for us to engage peace building and peacemaking a lot more from our faith than we have typically done. And this is not casting a blame on Christians. I'm one of them. I'm just saying that our material, our scriptures, our God is a peace-making God, is a relationship God. And the book that he's given us, the Bible, his message to us is grounded in that. I find that we actually have a lot more that we can use in this direction to build better relationships, even with people that at this point we might differ on other issues, on ideologies, on politics and other things. There is a lot that is contained in the scriptures that gives us direction on what to do and not what to say. And the second thing I would like to emphasize is really trying to write more on this topic from our perspectives.
Mm.
You'll be surprised. I mean, I did a whole lot of study around this, trying to figure out what do other communities say. I mean, you see the Mennonites, you see the Anabaptists and their writings. But what do the Methodists and the Baptists and the Catholics say on this topic? And there are some writings, but not yet enough. I think we can, from our religious and Christian backgrounds as well, I think we should encourage more writings around peace and peace building and conflict resolution. Similarly, we all are in networks with people from other faiths and religions, you know, Judaism, Muslim, and others. And I would say, let's encourage more people to write in these areas from their perspectives, because I think we don't have an overwhelming amount of material that we can use to build peace within our families, within our communities, and in our even internationally.
That's a beautiful word.
We might think we do, just because, you know, I don't know why we think we do, but it's actually not near enough. And actually, if you go further on and say, you know, if I were to engage a Muslim friend right now and say, what does your scriptures teach about peace building, conflict resolution and such? Or if someone were to approach me and say, what does the Bible really teach you about conflict resolution? I would have to be hunting for scriptures here and there, but there is a real coherent message in the scriptures, in the Bible anyways, that teaches about relationship building, but with God and with other people. And it's quite profound to me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I could not agree more. And I appreciate that you're encouraging us to think through these lenses. And you've done the work of paving a way for us. So I want to encourage our readers to pick up a copy of Making Peace with Fire by Dr. Kanoti. And if you are compelled by this and you want to have the opportunity to do so, you can come study at Denver Seminary under the tutelage of Dr. Kanoti. So Dr. Kanoti, thank you for making time to be here on the conversation at Engage 360.
This was great. Thank you, Tim.
Friends, thanks for choosing to spend some time with us. We're grateful for your interest, support, and prayers. Until next time, may the Lord bless you.